This is a Pinball News production.
How's everybody today?
Good.
How's everybody today? Good?
Awesome.
You sound like you were up at 3 o'clock in the morning like me to leave New Jersey to come here.
Come on.
Wake up. It's time for coffee. It's only like 12. Huh?
We got up with the spirit.
There you go. This is just a little commute. I figured I'd come to Michigan for the day. The good thing for you guys, I can't talk too long because my flight boards at 7:10. So the bad thing is that I don't get to be with you longer. But there's a little baby born in our family the other day. My niece gave birth to a little boy, and it's very cool. We haven't had that little Antonio.
Wow,
thank you. And we haven't had a baby in the family in 26 years or so. So I'm a great uncle. Yeah, I'm a great. I'm not that great, but I'm a great uncle. And then there's new grandma and grandpa, so it's kind of cool. That's a lot of fun. And, you know, last week I was in Texas, I was in Vegas, I was in Chicago seeing the guys and Pat Lawler. I gave a little update at the Texas show. And, of course, Martin was there, and damn it, Jim was there, and a whole bunch of other people that travel around. Next week I'll be in Denver and Milwaukee at the same time, right? So, two shows next week. The great thing is that pinball is getting bigger and bigger. You know, years ago, you did shows, you went to shows as a player, and they're like, we had people like me there, and there were no women and children. So if you go upstairs right now, they have the children's tournament going on, and there's a million kids playing games. I would stop that, actually, at this point. Thank you very much.
I didn't mean to start it.
It's all right. It's kind of cool how it's really growing, you know, a lot of new people. Who here, this is their first show? Anybody? Okay, cool. Welcome. Yeah. Is it your last show, too? Or are you going to come back? You'll come back, right? That's good. No, that's a good thing. I wouldn't miss this show. I've been here 4 out of 5. The first one I wasn't here, but this is 4 for me. So it's real good. I wouldn't miss it. Kaz does a great job, and everybody else. So I'll give you a little update what's going on with us. Good thing is we shipped about 1,100 games or something like that at this point, a little bit more than that. Probably a little bit around 200 LEs still to go. Several hundred regular games, a few hundred 75th anniversary games that'll probably ship in July when all the other stuff is gone. We've shipped some of those samples around the country and around the world, so there's been really good response to those. Hobbits on track, the team. I played one of the Whitewoods last week, and we're all going back when? 2 weeks, right? So we're all out there again, and it looks like that game will actually be on time for us-ish, I guess. What? No, it's, you know, it's a lot. Listen, you know, it took, you know, all the time to make a coin door and a power supply and a this and a that and everything, and a lot of that we don't have to do again. Thank God, you know. So some of it we're doing a little different, like the lighting is a little different in The Hobbit. We kind of learned more about what we wanted to do. And then I got to see Pat Lawler, which was really kind of cool. You know, you have the internet here? The interweb?
Is it here? Yeah, I'm sure they have. No. I'm not
going to. All right, well, right there. I don't know. If my iPad didn't die. Anyway, I was out at Pat's place, and he showed me his game. He has a Whitewood also, and he's doing great progress. He makes a lot of his own stuff, he has some of his own team, some of the old team that worked with him before that he's very comfortable with. And you know, it was kind of cool to see this guy. I said in Texas, I don't want to really repeat myself like other people, but you people probably didn't hear it. The cool thing about that for me was that as an operator, for many years, I operated all those games, you know, Whirlwind and Earthshaker and Banzai Run and, you know, Roadshow and, you know, Twilight Zone, Adam's Family, all those kind of games. Funhouse, you know, I remember when I unboxed the Funhouse and I said, holy crap, you know, I can't believe what that game is, you know. And he was explaining his game to me that he created, which was really cool. And he's going through all of what it is, and he's holding a couple of ramps in his hand that he welded together, and he's got his glasses on. He looked like a mad scientist. He was so animated and happy and excited. And I don't know Pat that way. I only know him since about 2001, more or less. And I stopped for a second for myself, and I said, I didn't hear what he said for about a minute, because I was thinking to myself, like, holy crap, this is Pat Lawler. And he was a hero of mine. He made great games that made money and were fun to play. And this guy works for me right now. So how cool is that, you know? And I know what he's going to do is going to be great. And I'm really looking forward to it. So, you know, and then we have, you know, Joe obviously doing The Hobbit, which is great too. So The Hobbit, let me tell you a little bit about that. So if you played Wizard of Oz upstairs or you've seen Wizard of Oz from any show to now, Wizard of Oz before was like a box of lights, you know, compared to what it is right now. Right now, it's if I say so, because I own the company, I have to say so, but if it was crap, I tell you it was crap. But it's a great game. I stopped playing it about 3 months ago in anticipation of 2.0 being released and then 3.0 being released, because I kind of wanted to see what it was going to be again. You know, you're in the woods. What is that saying? You're in the forest, you can't see the trees or whatever that is. So I stopped playing it for a few months, and then I played it again, 2.0 and 3.0, and I really liked the game a lot. And we sold them already, so I didn't have to say that to sell games. So playing it now is a lot different experience. And Martin, I hope you get a chance to review it. I don't know what you need, but, you know, if you
time,
you
know,
Martin is very honest, so if the game stinks, I'll find out that the game stinks. But the cool thing is, on location, it's out earning whatever it's next to. So if it's in the middle of two other games that are really great games, it's probably earning this the same amount of money that two or three games are making that one game is making. And in our industry, the magazine Playmeter, which is upstairs, the April issue, our game is number one on the chart, which is really cool. It's above everything else. With you got to realize a limited amount of people have the game that are responding to the poll. And Playmeter is, you know, the two magazines are very fair. There's a little politics involved with the two magazines. I write for Replay. So if Replay had the game number one, somebody might say, well, I don't know, you know, Jack writes for Replay. I don't write for Playmeter. So Playmeter has no benefit in putting it there unless it really is there. And that's really kind of cool. I'm very proud of that because, again, I'm an operator, so I want games to go on location. I want them to make money. That's how we're going to get more pinball players. I met some bar owners upstairs, and we were at the nightclub and bar show. Some of those people have our game already. Some of the people bought our game. And somebody said to me, it's a chick magnet. You know, you put it in the bar, and every girl is playing the game. And, you know, like, that's great. You know, okay, so that's good. So if every girl is playing the game, every guy is over there. And we're getting young people to play it. We're getting ladies to play it because they're a lot smarter than we are. As guys, you know, if they like it. You know, I had a few guys come to me and say, my wife wanted the game, so I didn't argue with her, and the game made its way into the house, so thank you. You know, I have two girls, and they don't play pinball at all, and I have 30 games in my house, and the only game they're playing is Wizard of Oz. Right, that's right. And I had these manly guys, you know, I don't want those ruby red slippers on the flippers there. And then when the game shipped, please don't take those off the game. They fit the game perfectly. Don't take them off the game. So they're on there, you know. So the game is what the game is. Now you kind of get it, because when we were showing all the pieces of what the game was, you got a taste of the onions and the celery and the garlic and the olive oil. You didn't taste the whole sauce. Now you can taste the whole sauce. The meal is cooked. Now with The Hobbit, I love metaphors, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm making myself hungry because tomorrow is sauce day, so, you know, somebody better be making meatballs there in Jersey, you know? Joanne, you hear me? Where are you? So, so with The Hobbit now, we're in a little different position because they broke up this title into three movies, right? Remember, it was going to be two movies, and our deal with Warner Brothers was we have to ship the game when the second movie comes out. So Warner Brothers said, okay, we can make more money, I guess, and we're making it to three movies. So how it works for us is that first and second movie assets will be reflected in the cabinet and the artwork on the playfield. Third movie assets would be on the screen. So, you know, otherwise we'll never ship the game in time. And, you know, I have them to thank. But thank goodness we're not making, like, some kind of toys where we have to make Smaug or something that you can't. Everybody in the world knows what he looks like, but we can't use it. So we can't do it until the DVD version of it ships. So it's kind of a weird thing, but when you pay the amount of money that we're paying for royalties, you know, we're still, you know, a tiny little nothing to Warner Brothers. So, but we're happy to do it. So we're going to show a video now. This is some of what JP's working on. This we posted last week. We put it up. So it just gives you a little idea of the dashboard. Can everybody kind of see? So to give you an idea of what this game is in a mechanical way, so the Wizard of Oz has our I.O. board in it. And all our boards, we own our boards. They're proprietary to us. Nobody else owns them. We do, which also took time to develop because we could have gone with some company's boards and licensed them or this and that. And then really they own the company. So nobody owns the company. I own the company. And we like to control our own destiny. I don't know if that's a real saying, but destiny's destiny. But so with the Wizard of Oz, the I.O. board is not completely populated. That means there are 17 drivers that are empty on the Wizard of Oz that are not used. So those drivers are not populated in the board. So with the Hobbit, with everything that's going on, all 17 drivers are used, extra. So if you think of the Wizard of Oz, what that is, and you say, well, there's 17 more things that need to be driven on the Hobbit as opposed to the Wizard of Oz. So the idea was with Wizard of Oz, we were trying to say, whether it's true or not, our belief was we were trying to build the greatest pinball machine ever. So the team building the Hobbit, what they believe right now is the Wizard of Oz is our worst game that we're ever going to build. Okay, that's their motivation. All right. So it's not that we're going to leave it, we're going to phone it in, we're going to take a layout and flip out a layout over, or we're going to... The game is a very... it's a challenging game. It's a different kind of game than... Wizard of Oz is more a stop-and-go exploration kind of game in a way, to me. The Hobbit, you're going to have controls for different things like diverters above the game, below the game. You're going to have targets. It's a more of a strategy game. So there's a lot of shots that you're going to have to make, and you're going to have to get better and better to play that game and excel at that game. And, you know, so it's a different... kind of departure. And actually, Pat's game will be a different change also in what he's doing, because remember, he's not doing a license. He's doing the theme from his brain. And game four, you know, we'll do a little something different. So every time we try to morph and change a little bit, and we keep it going. So so that's the little part of that stuff. Anybody have any questions or anything for me? Because I figured... I'll get up this morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, to come over here, to be here for a whole 6 hours. I figure if anybody's got any questions or anything, I'll take some questions before Butch. Yes?
Any idea when we will see more, even if it's Whitewood?
Is this the sarcastic?
No.
Is this the sarcastic comment loaded?
Yeah, I'll give you a sarcastic
Jim?
Comment later.
Damn it, Jim.
Any idea when we'll see more, like, maybe gameplay footage?
Yeah, you know, I took some with Joe playing it, and, you know... It's a hard thing because I don't know what it is. It's a ball rolling around and hitting things and this. I don't know. I remember I did it at the UK Pinball Festival, you know, in August of 2011. I think I was just so shit happy that we made a game that the ball could roll around. You know, it's like, wow, look what we did. You know, and I don't know. Now I think it takes more to wow me for me to say, you know, I want to show this to everybody. I think we'll get to the stage one day where we just come out with a game and here's a game. You know, with The Hobbit, a lot of members of our team, they don't feel that they need to show more. You know, there's a battle that always goes on. It happened with Wizard of Oz, and I kind of won, but I kind of lost because we showed more, and it gave other people more ideas about what we were doing. And we have some things on this game that have pending patents right now. And it's not just to say that because I don't feel like showing you a video. You know, send me an email, I'll send you a video or whatever. But make you sign that much on this. No. But, you know, it's playing pretty good, you know. So I think probably in the next few weeks I would show a video. I don't have a problem with that. I want to show the playfield artwork when it gets approved. That's probably the next thing I would show is the artwork for the playfield because it's really cool as it's developing. You know, so... Anybody else? Yes.
You're working with the same screen size as the Wizard of Oz as far as the top?
Yes. So the screen, you know, JP's, you know, morphed a little bit in his dashboard. He's changed some things around. He's really amazing in what he does. You know, why did I show the screen? You know, some people say, well, you know, the pinball machine gets played here with the screen. You know, but again, you know, I've said it many times. Us older people, we have to look at the ball all the time. Young people can see the whole game. You know, they see everything because I watch them play. They can drive and text most of the time at the same time. Not very well. Not very well, and I don't really suggest that, but... You know, they can gather the whole game, so that's why the monitor is kind of important. So I think we're staying at the same 27. I know we're staying at the same 27 inch size. You
know. Is it a wide body? Is it
yes,
standard body?
It's a wide body. Same.
Pat Lawler is not right. Pat
Lawler. You know what? I hang on one second. I opened my mouth and said it's not. After seeing him in the game and everything he's doing and all of what's going on, I'm gonna just. Shut up about that.
Okay.
You know, the thing about Pat is that I said it before, and I don't want to get too gushy about it. You know, if you really hire a professional, you know, you just, you know, the metaphor then I've used is if you hired Michelangelo, you don't tell him how to paint the Sistine Chapel.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, I could have, we all have suggestions in the team. It's a team effort. But the whole reason why he wants to do this game with us is because he knows he'll have the budget and he'll have the creative license to make a really spectacular game. Somebody's not going to tell him, take that out of the game because it's $5 and it's going to be fun, so take it out of the game. So he's not going to hear that from us. So, yes?
Are you guys going to be using the same lights you used the Wizard?
No. I'm glad you asked that question. We'll have lights, and they'll light up. But the design of them is different. You know, our lighting was some issue with a driver chip that we didn't make. And not that I'm not taking responsibility for it. It's not like the switch that General Motors had for 57 cents that they were lazy. You know, this is something that, you know, we had to do a workaround for. So you know what's cool about that? When we designed it 3 years ago, that was the latest technology. 3 years later, there's later technology, and we're able to do different things now, and we're going to incorporate those things in the hobby. Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
On the Wizard of Oz, has anybody in your company been successful and actually completed the actual main wizard mode? And
maybe
if so, how long did it take?
Yeah, I don't know.
Even without the glass on.
Yeah, you know, it's a good Keith question because we get a lot of people with Keith games. You know, obviously Simpsons, Lord of the Rings, different games like that. This game is just. Remember, not only did you have Keith on this game all that time, you had Ted on it for like the last year and a half. So, it's good luck. You know, it's we wanted to make it fun for a beginner and not frustrating, but we wanted to make it really deep for people like Keith to play. And you know, yes.
I just wanted to ask for The Hobbit. Are you guys thinking about getting somebody from the film to do some of the voice work?
We thought about it. The guy that plays Bilbo Baggins or whatever his name is. He wanted to like something like $100,000 to do 10 minutes worth of whatever. So if somebody can imitate his voice, let us know, whatever. But, you know, the music is two steps from hell because the music for it was out of whack. I mean, as it is, we pay, you know, I don't know, we have about 30 songs in The Wizard of Oz. It's about $150 a game, something like that, for music alone. So, you know, you're talking about when Stern did Lord of the Rings, those games cost them like $10 for the whole game, $15. Because when there was only one company doing something, there's not an auction. So they go for licenses, and that company calls us, whoever it is, and they say, hey, Stern is doing so-and-so. Do you want this? No, I don't want it. I don't want Angry Birds. You know, that's fine with me. I don't want that. So, you know, they want to get you in a bidding war. So I don't want to get in a bidding war. Anyone? Yes?
Question about the E-Plate. I think it was called E-Plate technology.
Yep.
How did that work out for you, and you're going
to
continue with
it? Well, E-Plate is part of Dynamics. It's a credit card. It's a smart credit card. I have one in my wallet, you know, over here. It's, you know, and it's very cool. It lights up and all that kind of stuff for different experiences. As it relates to our game, you know, you can accumulate yellow bricks for the Yellow Brick Road or points for Hobbit, and it goes towards buying the game, you know. So, you know, and actually there are some games out on location with the credit card swipe. So not only takes dynamic card, there are other credit cards, you know, that it takes too. So, anyone else?
I got one more.
Yes.
I remember, and maybe I'm misremembering, but the Wizard of Oz, that some operators, you guys are leasing the machines and then getting them back. What are you going to do with the old machines? Are you going to just kind of keep trying to re-lease them and then sell it like a used car?
Yeah, it's kind of like a BMW, right? So we haven't done that yet because, you know, we're trying to get out of our way to get everybody their games. But there are maybe about 30 prototype games out and around. I think there's one upstairs. So, you know, some of those games, they're, I guess you have to call them a piece of history because they can't be updated easily. You know, the motherboard in them and what they have in them, it was designed in this time frame, and that's where it's going and that's where it's living, and it's not going to get updated. Those, there are some people that have interest in buying them. We haven't sold any. You know, we've had all kinds of stupid offers on them. I don't know what we'll do with those. I think as we get further in this year, we have a lot of operator demand right now for our game. And, you know, when they also read stuff like this poll that just came out, the phone's ringing too. People want something. It's spring buying season in our industry, so guys with the seasonal locations, the amusement parks, Jersey Shore, a place like that, movie theaters, different places like that want games. Most of them, you know, they get their own financing or whatever. If what I said a while ago, I think in one of the shows, maybe a year ago, was, you know, if somebody really wanted a game and the operator wouldn't buy it, you know, I might consider putting a game in there and giving the operator a certain percentage to take care of the game and the location a certain percentage, and we take a majority. So I wouldn't mind operating my own game. You know, I'm not gonna own a pinball company and go to you and say, why don't you go out and put pinball machines out? You know, I'm an operator. I'm a technician. This is what I've done for 39 years of my life in the industry. So I would certainly operate. I operate games now. I would certainly operate my own game. You know, I know it makes money. I know I buy it at cost, first of all. So, you know, just like a car company, when you think about it, it's a great thing for BMW and all these car companies. You know, they build the car at this price. They lease it at this price. They make all their money back. They lease it again. They lease it again. It's a great thing. Who could buy a $60,000 car? Not a lot of people. Who could lease it for $399 a month? I don't know. Everybody. So it was a great thing. So that hasn't really hit our industry yet. In some ways it has, but not with pinball. It has with redemption games because they make a lot of money, and video games, even though their earnings go like that, it really hasn't hit with pinball. So, yes?
I got a two-part hard question.
Which part
is on everybody's mind? So you had problems with the direct screen print, and that's why you didn't get all your LEDs out. Has that been solved to where you're going to be able to get more of those out to the people that are still on their waiting list that, you know, paid their money? And then the other part is, I know that you mentioned because of that, you've gone to decals. And is that, like, going forward, all of them are going to be decals? Or are you going to give the customers the option to get the direct screen when they pre-order?
So the LE cabinets are made by a company in Illinois. Great company, okay? You know, when you get a vendor and they sneeze, you get a cold. Right? So, you know, I don't want to explain you bought a hamburger from me and I got to teach you how the cow got killed. You're not interested in that. But since you asked the question, it's open for, you know, an answer. So he had a problem in December, part of January, doing his business. Nothing related to the cabinet or to me or to money or anything like that. We didn't get those cabinets. The plan always, believe it or not, was that the regular games would get a different cabinet with decals, because the thought was the regular games were going to operators. As an operator, the last thing I want is that cabinet on location, because it's going to get screwed up, banged up. You know, it's a showpiece. You know, that's basically a playfield that's a cabinet. Okay, the whole cabinet is like a playfield, right? So we had Chicago Gaming, you know, Churchill Cabinet Company, who builds my competitor's cabinets. They got the drawings for our cabinet in January of 2013, okay? It took until January of 2014 for me to get cabinets from them, all right? You know, the box, if you go upstairs, the box that the game ships in, right? The guy that owns a box company is a friend of mine, and years ago I actually got him involved with Joe Blackwell, because he's a pinball guy, to design Stern's box. So, of course, if I'm building a pinball machine, I'm going to the guy that designed the box for Stern. That's my friend, okay? How hard is it going to be to design our box? This is a pinball box already made. It took a year to design our box. Their game weighs 250 pounds. Our game weighs 326 pounds. Our game, I shipped it from here to there, threw it off a loading dock, tip it over, do this, do that, do the other thing, whatever. It's got to be heavier cardboard. It's got to be this. It's still got to be the right size that fits on my pallet, because when we ship games overseas, you got to have 69 games in a 40-foot container and 33 games in a 20-foot container. So, you know, everything took longer. Going back to our cabinet guy, so Chicago Gaming, Churchill, our fault, their fault, back and forth, different changes, designs, tweaks. They get busy, we get busy. We had to ship regular games. We had to ship regular games. We didn't have regular cabinets. We shipped them in LE cabinets. So some people got direct print cabinets on their regular games. Congratulations to those people. You know, God bless them. You know, so, you know, going forward, you know, the regular games will be the decal cabinets. The LE games would be direct print is my preference. We're going to see what we do with the Hobbit. You know, if we can get the right price again, because you order 1,000, 1,200 or something, then you go back. Well, I used up 300 or 400 regular games. Now I have to reorder, so the price went up. So it's all those good things, too. So I guess the plan is the same as it was. You know, if I can get the Hobbit cabinets, the LE Hobbit cabinets with the direct print. And direct print is great, but we've had issues with them, too. I mean, look, it's like I say, you know, if it's not broke, it's not pinball. So I had a guy, you know, I could write a book. You know, last week a guy opens his box and he has a problem with the front of his game. What's wrong with your game? Well, there's a mark that's a, well, there's a mark on my game. Okay. What is it? How big is it? Well, it's the size of a pencil tip. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What should I do? How many games do you own? Well, I have two other games. Well, you know what you should do? Close the box up, put it back together. I'll have somebody pick it up because you shouldn't own a pinball machine. Yeah. Well, I'm very picky. He said a different word that I'm not going to say. Which, okay. I said, I guess you don't have a mirror in your house. What do you mean? You don't look at yourself, do you? You're not perfect. Okay? The game's not going to be perfect. They're all snowflakes. They're made by human beings. 25 of them in a row with all the same parts, with all the same people building them, are going to play 25 different ways. And it's not that I don't care about the guy. By the end of the conversation, after, God, an hour, that I'll never get back in my life, he was thrilled to keep the game. And he wanted a Hobbit. I says, good, don't buy it from me. Buy it from somebody. buy it from Gary from Abel, because he's got infinite patience, apparently, you know, so God bless him. But again, look, this is what I did at pinballsales.com. There would be no Jersey Jack pinball if there wasn't pinballsales.com. There's 14,000 customers since 1999. When I shipped you a Stern game and you had a playfield problem, you had a cabinet problem, you had broken plastic, you had this, you had that, I went in my pocket and I paid for it. Gary wasn't paying for it. I'm being recorded. When he listens to it, he knows damn well he didn't pay for it. I did. Okay? But guess what? The goodwill went to our company. Nothing against Gary, because free is a bad four-letter word to a lot of people. So if I'm going to support a Stern pinball machine that way, how am I going to support a pinball machine that's got my name on it, my company? I've been to people's homes myself to fix their games. And they crapped their pants when I rang the doorbell. Holy cow, it's Jersey Jack. It's okay. Just calm down. It's okay. I'm human just like you. It's fine. Give me a cup of coffee and I'll fix your game and we'll play a couple of games and I'm going home. Whatever. It's really cool. I'm having a great time. And I give all the credit to God. I really do. You know, I'm living a dream. You know, it's been difficult. And you all read Pinside. You know, how many people read Pinside? Anybody? Nobody reads. Good. See, on the audio part, they'll think nobody put their hand up. You know, all the people on Pinside are experts. They're experts. They haven't done shit. Okay? They know everything. They haven't done anything. None of them. Not one of them. Okay? When one of them starts a pinball company and sells $20 million worth of games, sets up a pinball factory, builds a game like upstairs, you know, they said, well, you're never going to sell them. People aren't going to pay you. Right. You're never going to design it. Your flippers are weak. I don't like the slippers on there. The Wizard of Oz is a theme. You're never going to build it. You're never going to ship it. It's never going to make money. It's never going to... You know what? Guess what? They're wrong. So, you know, if I live my life and I let other people live my life for me, I wouldn't have gone to the restaurant that they said was really bad that I think is good. I wouldn't have gone to the movie that everybody said, a bunch of people said was bad, and I thought was good. Okay? I'm Jersey Jack, but I'm from Brooklyn. I'm a Brooklyn street operator. I'm Italian. So I got a little bit of, like, in your face. Like, tell me I can't do something. Just tell me. Come on in, the water's cold. You can't do it. Whatever. Really.
You can't give me a free game.
I can't give you a free game. You're damn right. Give that man a free game. Come upstairs. I'll play you a free game.
Yes, I will say, I was very impressed when you first shipped the prototypes. And they had a problem at Marvin's. Parker was on the phone, and it was with you.
We were there,
and
yeah.
It was on a Sunday because we broke your machine.
So, you know, the cool thing is that, like, there's a phone number, 1-800-473-JACK, right? And it rings on this cell phone. And I got operators and people all over the country, all over the world, literally. And they call me. And they email me. And, you know, if I didn't love what I'm doing, this is not work. So I'm going to tell young people like you, and that kid back there, okay? And a few of you younger people, right? So my word to you of advice is, A, find something that you really love, that you're passionate about. Because today, you know, a lot of people have jobs, and they went to school to become a lawyer or some other thing because they wanted to impress their parents or grandparents or their friends. And they're making a lot of money, but they're really miserable. They don't like what they're doing, and they want to do something else, okay? So I got really lucky. Before I was going to go to college, I stopped for 6 months, and I took a job with a company, and it was an ad for a pinball mechanic, okay? And I was going to do it 6 months, and my electronics teacher said, don't do that, you'll never go to school. And he was right, I never went to school. So I wound up owning several businesses in the industry, the multi-million dollar companies that I helped create and I'm part of. So find something that you really love to do. If you shovel shit, be the best shit shoveler that there is in the world. Okay? Shovel that really fast and you're going to, believe me, people will love that, you know? But really, whatever you're going to pick to do, and don't let anybody tell you that you can't do something, because you can do something. If you quit, you can't succeed, right? And if you don't quit, you can never fail. Real easy stuff, you know, real easy stuff. And the people that work in our companies, they believe in the company. Because my car is like the first one in the parking lot in the morning and the last one to leave in the afternoon, evening, whatever. I was at the building today at 4 in the morning. So I was there for about an hour and a half doing some things I had to do to set up what I had to do for today. And I feel fine. I can do cartwheels. I'm healthy as a horse. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. If this freaking company and all the bullshit that happened didn't kill me, I don't suggest it to anybody else, actually. It's not for everybody, okay? Not for 1 minute. But, all right, I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Butch Peel. Please don't get up and leave. Everybody, let's go. So I'm going to go catch my flight. If there's no other questions, I'm gone. All right, I'll say hi to Jersey. Yes, the great guy back there, the photographer.
Can you do that cartwheel video?
No, that's right. Wait, I'm going to do another cartwheel when the last LE game goes out the door.
You see the last one?
Yeah. The last one was funny as hell, yeah. Jen gave me a lesson, and she said, Dad, you're going to break your ass. So she was a gymnast. So, you know, yeah, I know. Well, I didn't break my foot. I need a chiropodist to do that. All right, so that's it, everybody. Thank you all. I'll stay a little bit. I'll stay 15 minutes.
Oh, okay, all right.
I want to make sure you're doing the right job.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, how do you follow that up, right? My name is Butch Peel. I work for Jack's. You talk about living the dream. That's me right here. I mean, find something that you're passionate about. I started working for the U.S. Army at White Sands Missile Range 29 years ago. I'm looking to retire hopefully in the next 5 or 6 years and do this full time. But, you know, I was just a pinball geek. I love pinball, anything about it. I love playing it. I love talking about it. I love watching other people play it. I love repairing games. I've taught myself, I'm an electrical engineer by trade, taught myself everything I needed to know to be able to restore games, bring them back to life. It's very, very satisfying to me to bring a game back from the dead. I do board work for people through the mail, you know, all this stuff. And I talked to Jack about, you know, have you thought of maybe having some kind of an authorized board repair facility for your games? And he kind of listened a little bit, you know. Like you said, you email him, he emails you back. You call him, he talks to you. And he still, to this day, won't tell me what I said that made him want to hire me. But he needed somebody to write the manual. I volunteered. I said, I'm the strange electrical engineer. I actually can write. You know, I don't go take that, you know what I meant sort of thing. When I misspelled this word or used horrible grammar or whatever, you know, like a lot of electrical engineers do. But I am just, thrilled. I'm in the same thing he is with Pat Lawler. When I'm in there with Joe Balser and Jim Thornton and the guys back in Chicago, and we're looking around, we're talking about The Hobbit, and I'm just like, I got to pinch myself. I mean, what did I do to deserve this? I just love it. I'm writing the manual for The Wizard of Oz. I'm continuing to write the manual. As you can imagine, we sell games. We put them out there. They have different layouts to them. Some of the earlier games had different this or different that, and we changed them as we went. Well, you can't abandon the old game, so I continue to grow it and say that your game was manufactured before this date. You have these kind of boards in there or this type of a setup. You have these fuses in these places. It's changed since then, so I have to put a whole other section in. So we're up to almost 350 pages now of manual, and hopefully we'll get those completed and out to everybody soon. I don't know if you guys can see over here. I was going to try and drag some of this around, but it's too much furniture moving. I'm going to try and stand over here and get out of people's way. But I'm going to talk to you today a little bit about the Wizard of Oz menu system and some diagnostics and troubleshooting tips. And I know I'm on a kind of a slippery slope here because a lot of you guys repair your own games and you do, but I've had a lot of people come to me and say, you know, what kind of a tool should I buy for doing this? Or, you know, if you were going to put together a box, you know, of things to have, if you're going to start tinkering with your game, I'd love to play with this stuff. What can I possibly buy to work on a pinball machine? What do I need? How do you fix this? I'm talking all day long at these shows to people that are, you know, I saw this or I saw that. I'm having problems with this. What do you think about that? And there's just a lot of people, like Jack says, that are buying games now that have never, you know, they didn't realize you could pull the play field up. Oh, wow, you mean the glass comes off. That's really cool. So bear with me if I say a few things that are a little bit, you know, repetitive for you guys or things that you already know. But if you do know a lot about making a pinball machine work like it's supposed to, you know that there's a lot of subtleties. There's a lot of little things that are really important. And so I'm going to try and hit on some of those little things along with some of the bigger also. But the Wizard of Oz menu system, you get into it by way of the coin door buttons, as we all know. You hit the black button and up pops the menu screen, and you get sounds every time you push a button, so you know your buttons are working. You know, sometimes you get in some of those old games and the buttons don't work and you're not moving around, you can't even tell what's going on. You'll hear an audio every time you hit a button. You'll hear an audio response out of the game speakers. If you want to be able to run your coils, the high power coils will be disabled by the switches here inside the door. There's one switch there just to tell the game that the coin door is open or closed. There's another switch that physically cuts the connection and makes a break in the connection between the I.O. board and the coils under the play field. So you get this little switch here. It's the one on top, and it has a little knurl in it there where you can kind of pull it out. It's got what they call a cheat position. And what you'll do there is it'll act like the coin door is closed when you take and pull this out. So you just pop that switch out. You'll feel it click into position. Now your game operates just as if the coin door were closed. But, you know, there's a little gotcha to that. If you've got the glass off and you've got the play field lifted, there's a lot of places under there that'll get your attention. And real quick, if you get any part of your body against that, you know, you're gonna know it real quick. And you're going to say, what is that buzzing sound? What is that burning smell? That's my flesh. No, it's not that bad, really.
That won't be under warranty.
Yeah. No doctor bills. So here's what your main menu looks like when you pop this up. You got a test, settings, audits, utilities, install presets, reports, and resets. So those just mean you can go up and down through those, select that the test one is highlighted now. As you move through there, you move to a different selected one here. And then when you actually want to go into a sub-menu, you hit the select button. Pretty simple stuff. The install presets, there's a ton of different things in the game. If you go into your settings, the make it more difficult, to make it more easy to play, to make something easier to achieve, to make it more difficult to achieve, there is so much in this game that you can customize your game, personalize your game. The game in my house, my wife hates it when you can't do the there's no place like home when she hates that timer. It really freaks her out. Take that timer off. I liked it better when it wasn't time. Go into the settings, turned it off. Now you don't have to worry about that. Right? Play as long until your balls ring. But there's a bunch of different settings here that install presets will take care of you, care of it for you. So if you want to go into a tournament type of mode, or you want to go back to some of the proto coil settings and see how it played back then a little bit, it'll kind of mock that game. And then all different kinds of three ball, five ball, easy, extra easy, medium, and it'll change literally 20 or 30 settings in your all at one time. So you don't have to go through and try and figure out which one does what. I'm going to kind of hit these menu items real quick so I can get down to the adjustments part. But resets, you know, your factory settings, go to a factory reset, which takes all your audits and everything to zeros also. You can reset your high scores. Pretty simple and straightforward. Utilities is where we do our software updates. You can put a custom message on, like in the old Williams games, a burn-in mode for testing things when you've had some problem. You want to check it out, make sure it works over a long period of time. Hardware info, error logs, set your clock, all those kinds of things are in utilities. Settings. Now, the ones with the asterisks are the ones I'm going to go into more detail in, but there's a pricing settings here for changing your whatever type of money you're using to play the game, and you've got high score settings are also under that. All right, take care. We'll see you next weekend in Denver. Yeah, we're all
Denver.
We've been on the D train here lately. We went to Dallas, Detroit, Denver, and then I think next go Seattle. Kind of breaks the screen, but anyway, balls per this I got to apologize. This screen right here is a 2.0 version. Well, this one is 3.0, but I have several in here that are 2.0, and it's just showing you how the breakneck pace. They're trying to keep up with the changes made in this game and all the things as it moved along, and why the manual takes so long because something changes a little bit. I've already got it drawn. I've already got it in there. I've got to make a bunch of changes to catch up, but some of my screens are a little old and dated. Things might be a little bit out of order, but system settings has a bunch of things just for, you know, this will look very similar on the Hobbit game, for instance. It'll have a three ball or five ball. It'll let you save ball time. This is not Wizard of Oz type settings. This is Jersey Jack pinball game type settings. So how many extra balls you can have, how many you can have stacked at any one time, your little game restart. People that don't know pinball, imagine somebody that buys a pinball machine, Wizard of Oz is their first game, and then they're like, what does game restart mean? Well, that's when you're playing a really good game, and you've got credits on the game where you set on free play, and your little four-year-old comes over there and pushes that glowing button and starts your game over right in the middle of your play. That's what game restart is for. Put it on never, they can play with it, push it all they want, it doesn't start your game over. Little things like that, you know, tilt warnings and per game, per ball, you know, you get three per ball, three per game. I like to put mine on per ball because you want to shake that. There's no place like home. And if you get a couple of those on your first ball, a couple of tilt warnings, you want to be able to shake it again on the second ball or the third ball. So I like to put that one on per game. Master volume, track mode sounds. The replay award system, we kind of separate that out. The old Williams games had a fixed or auto setting on their replay. And the fixed would allow you to put separate, you know, a list of scores in. And at those scores, no matter what, the game would either award you a free game or an extra ball or some points or something like tickets, whatever they do. Now, the way we separate those, we put replay is more like our fixed portion of that. I'm sorry, like the auto portion of that, and that it puts a score up here, and it tries to match the percentage. It'll adjust the score required to get a free game so that on the average, over a period of time, 10% of the games will actually be able to be won. If a bunch of people win a lot of games, guess what? Where are the replay scores going? Up, 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 up. So that 90% of the time, you won't win a free game. And that's just, you know, one guy will walk up there and he's a really good player. Another one walks up, it's a child, it's flipping flippers at the same time. You know, all of that will be figured out and be averaged out using the replay awards thing. But you can turn that on and off. There's an off setting. If you don't want it to auto do that, you can put a boost on there that when your game is the high score is a, or the score for a free game is exceeded, that it can boost that momentarily until they put more money into the game out on location. All that stuff is in there. And then you have the flexibility with the score awards to do fixed threshold things where at this point, no matter what, at this point, no matter what, for a home environment. So a lot of different things to consider. Game settings, like I said, all these different things that you can do. You can decide how many times Toto is even available. You can turn him on or off, completely off.
You can set the goal for the twisting of the house. You can set the timer for how long you have if you fall off of there without making the number of turns so you get to go shoot it back up and put it in there. Crystal ball difficulty, rescue. You can just flat out make the gameplay just however you want it to, whatever makes your boat float. Clear locks on game over. That's one of the default settings I like to change because it's a good idea if you leave the game locks in the game. If you forget about that and you go to lift your play field up, you can send balls running back into the ramp main switch, and you can drop a ball out of the castle play field into the bottom of the cabinet. If you have the lid off of your PC, you could get the picture, right? So bad things, man, bad things. Coil settings. Who else lets you change your strength of your coil? All the coils, everything in the game, from flippers to vucks to slings to everything, could be set right here. Again, if you don't like that, throne kicks that thing out and it somehow times go between the flipper, it just comes out in like an arc. You want it to rocket to that left flipper, put a few more points on there and it'll do so. Anybody know what this is?
Yes.
What is it?
Switch tool. Or a leak fault adjustment tool.
A switch adjuster, yes. Now can you get the follow-up? What are these?
The wrong tool.
These are not switch adjusters, okay? So any of these other tools you should not be using to adjust your switches in your game. I won't say that I never have myself, but I'll tell you never to do that. Let's put it that way. So your game is switches. If the switches are out of adjustment, if the switches are not malfunctioning, if the switches are broken, if the switches don't make any contact, your game isn't going to play. There's just going to be things that just don't happen, and it makes for a really bummer game. You know, your flippers are weak. You can't ever get the crystal ball mode because the B target doesn't work. Those sorts of things. So these are the kind of adjustable switches that we have in the Wizard of Oz. There's a switch that we use for the spinner and for the ramp entry. Here's a switch for the ramp maid. Here's switches that are used behind the rubber target under the witch and for behind the doors up there for the castle double door bashing. Here's a long switch that's used for the drop target, to reset the drop target. Rollover switch for virtually every rollover switch in the game, save the one here that's in the plunger lane and one behind the single castle door. How do I know all this stuff? Because I guess I wrote the manual, something like that. There's a lot of information. Here's your end of stroke switches on your flipper. There's one on those. Every single flipper on the game has an end of stroke switch. Here are the flipper switches that go inside the cabinet. We use double contact. They have a slash on either one to make an X. As they hit, they kind of wipe, kind of like knives. When you sharpen a knife, you go from end to end. That's how the action of cleaning those happens as they are pressed. The tilt mechanism is a switch in and of itself. It tells you when the game is being roughed up too much. Rollover switches for the Tin Man, the Lion, and the Scarecrow, and Toto. Pop bumper switches, target switches. Switches for stand-ups, some of those are very important in the game. Sling switches up in the corner there. All these things can be adjusted. Some of the ones that can't be adjusted are the opto switches. We use, for those of you that don't know how an opto works, it's basically, if I were to stand here with a flashlight shining it in Martin's eyes, and he told me he raised his hand whenever he didn't see the light anymore, well, that would be because something came between me and Martin that caused the light to be blocked. So a lot of those are normally what we call normally open, and an opto will be normally closed if, like we do on the wheel here for the spinning house, it has a notch comes by, a U-shaped opto that has the transmitter receiver both in the same area. When a notch comes by, it's broken most of the time, but it becomes open there and broken again, and this disc literally spins around and it has a notch equally spaced in there, so it knows where the house is all the way around, and it has, in addition to that, a home sensor with another one of these switches on the other side that actually tells it when it's in that position where the legs are lined up with the kicker. The U-shaped opto underneath the witch mechanism here is what tells the game that the witch mechanism has raised completely above the playfield. She's in her home position, we call it. When the motor brings her back down, there's another U-shaped bracket that has a flag that comes down, and when she hits all the way to the bottom, it breaks the opto beam. So opto is used here in our ramps. Opto is used to enter both left and right orbits. Opto is used in the trough extensively, six pairs of them there.
can't really adjust those. They either work or they don't. When they don't work, it's either the transmitter or the receiver side, and there's ways to test that, which I can go into more detail. Jack wants to do some of these, maybe do two seminars at some of these shows in the future. And we do one where we update things going on with the company, and then I give a seminar on some of the adjustments and things we can do in the game. So here's a pop bumper switch. One of the things, the big difference in the way a game plays. How many times have you gone to a game on location and the pop bumper just don't kick? The flippers don't work. Those are real big bummers to someone trying to learn the game, trying to see that this is fun. Everything is just much more slower. The pop bumpers add that degree of uncertainty. The difference between one game and the next can be just which way the pop bumper kicks the thing. Well, here's your switch underneath here. You got two contacts that are going to make right there. If you go in and you try and adjust this and you say, well, all I need to do is close that thing and you bend this arm right here, you're going to mess up your pop bumper. What needs to occur at all times, there needs to be some pressure between this blade and the spoon that holds the skirt actually sits in like that. There's this red piece that goes clear through the play field, and it needs to sit in the center of that. If it's off to the side, it's got these big old screw holes here so that whole arm can move that spoon around. It needs to sit right in there. If you take and push on the thing, it should snap right back to the center. Snap right back to the center. It's going to move, and as it does, it pushes the spoon downward, and it causes a switch to make. If there's a gap between here, that's less sensitivity for your pop bumper. So this blade has to press on that, on the spoon, and stay in that position. So the adjustment you make is down here to this one. And you're not going to bend this contact. You bend the one that's pushing onto it. So you bend this stiffener down here, and you bring the contacts closer. I like to do with pop bumpers is get the play field, set it all the way up, and get to the side where I can look at the switch just like it's shown up here from the side. And I can try and find a place, an angle that I can look at, and I can see a little light between the two contacts. And then you can adjust it to where they're just really close, because this will snap back and that'll open up. You won't have problems with ringing. Should not, if you keep pressure against it. Slingshot switches. Another trick here, this is the way the slingshots work. They have a switch on either side so that over that large triangle, a ball hits anywhere along there, it should be able to close one of the two switches. So they use two switches side by side. Again, the X for the cleaning, because they're going to get hit quite a bit. As you get a switch shipped to you, it looks kind of like this. And when you put it in, if you put a switch in, a brand new switch like that, you really need to open this up a little bit, set the front edge out, the part that's going to contact the rubber. That's what the round circle is here. So you bend it and use your switch adjuster. You're always adjusting these switches and the stiffener tab down here next to here. You don't want to bend the ends of those. Same thing with the micro switch. You don't bend the arm of the micro switch right at the end and try and make contact better. You bend it back towards the other end where it's actually making contact with the switch. Your switches shouldn't look like they've been run over by a lawnmower. They shouldn't be mangled. They shouldn't be twisted. You got two contacts that need to face one another. If that's mangled at all, you got that much less contact area for that switch to make and to make your slingshots kick. Okay. So what I do is bend it out a little bit. Then when I put it through the play field and fasten it and put the rubber around it, it flexes it a little bit. Then you adjust the switch blade furthest from the ball, and bring it in closer to where they touch. And you need to do this with the slingshot plastic off, looking down at it, and you need to test it in the diagnostics or during a game. That's the neat thing about our diagnostic mode. If you pop that little switch out I was talking about, the game will kick all the high-powered coils. So you can just take a ball, kick it out of the trough, and you can move it around and test the pop bumpers. You can drop a ball in there in game over mode, in the diagnostics mode, and see if it's working the way you want it to. You can pop it between the slingshots and do the same sort of thing. I'm kind of running out of time here. I won't say that my boss is long-winded, but my boss is long-winded. Anyway, what he says is much more interesting and more applicable than me anyway. So, target switch is the same sort of setup here. You need these stiffeners here so that you don't get ringing in there. When a ball hits, it doesn't cause the blades to do this. So that's what the two stiffeners are for on either side. You saw the same thing on the sling. It had a stiffener against that back switch because it's going to pound against there, and the kicker's going to kick, and the rubber band's going to bring the the switches back to their normal position, the outer edges of those switches. When the ball hits them, they actually get crunched a little bit. It's a violent game. It's a violent world under that glass. A lot of things going on. I'm going to go ahead and just knock it off right there. But, you know, I want to, you know, just kind of give you guys an idea of the switches. Actually, one more little thing, just an interesting one. A few of the important switches on our game, some of the things you might not know. For all of you that have sat through this, oh, I know all this crap. Why have I listened to this guy? I mean, if the game, certain switches on our, I'm going to walk that slippery slope again. It's important switches. They're all important. But there are a few that just disable entire modes if they don't work. Your bumper entry rubber, we call it switch. It's right here behind this rubber. And the ball, ideally in a game, is going to bounce around. The slings are going to hit it. You're going to knock it over here and hit the rainbow targets, ricochet. It's designed, you know, the idea of the software, the guy that writes the software, Keith, he put a switch, one of those little stand-up switches in there. If that switch gets out of adjustment and will not make, that switch never sets the Glinda target up here. So if you don't get, and Glinda helps me a lot. I don't know about the rest of you guys, but she gives me a couple rainbow letters. She gives me, you know, helps me along quite a ways, because I am no Keith Johnson when it comes to playing. Unless the glass is off, then I can play with him just, you know, like anybody. But so you should see that ball bounce around. If you never see that ball target light up there, the little star under Glinda, you know that this switch is out of adjustment here or stuck. So you need to fix that and adjust it. And it should just, anytime the ball, just take the ball and just kind of roll it from up here, just plunking it against there ought to trigger that switch. Your bumper exit lane right here, if the ball drops into here, that's what sets the haunted mode. You spell haunted doing all this work with the pop bumpers, spelling haunted. If it does, this switch is out of adjustment and the ball can somehow sneak by it without actually actuating it, you'll never get any of your haunted scoring modes. Crystal ball spinner, if that spinner gets out of whack, it's on a little, the spinner spins completely around, it's got an arm up there. If that switch somehow gets knocked on the other side of that arm and you can shoot the spinner without actuating the switch, you'll never get your two ball multi ball modes. So you got to get, you might make sure that spinner works, and that's a test mode thing. Put it in the switch test, flip the switch, and you'll see it spin around and make. And the throne room rubber over here is one that is one of the big actuators for our shaker motor. So when the ball's bouncing around down here, if you're not getting a lot of shaker motor when you come close to the throne room over there, then you know that switch is out of adjustment. State Fire balloon bumper is the one that makes a lot of noise down here. That da 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 da. About half of the da 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 will go away if you don't have that switch set right. Okay. I'm upstairs. If any of you want to talk, we can go as geeky as you want. We can go as technical as you want. I'm just thrilled to be able to come around and represent the Jersey Jack Pinball Company. I'm proud as hell of what we do, and I'm happy as heck as I can be just to be part of it. It's changed my life, and I'm passionate about pinball, like Jack says. Thank you all.